Hey everybody, welcome in, welcome in. Come on, come on, get some of this good stuff. Come on, get some of this good stuff. I have a very esteemed guest today, and I'm going to make sure that I take my time and we enjoy this. And I know that for the third or fourth time, people keep telling me that I get started too fast. So I'm going to wait a little while to give people time to come and join us. We're actually on Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter all simultaneously because I wanted to make sure to maximize the audience. So I'm really excited about today's inaugural live. Normally, I present these by myself, but I'm a big believer in you leverage ideas of everybody else, and we all can go, as Napoleon Hill say, use the mastermind principle, where a lot of collective minds create one decisive, conclusive mind. So I said, you know what? I know some pretty heavy hitters, so let me go in here and pull from my friends and colleagues and people I have high esteem for, and let me see if some of them will come on and share some ideas with my audience. And the first gentleman I asked, it was like that. He said, right, yeah, let's do it. You let me know what time and we'll do it. So I'm happy to have him here. A lot of y'all already know who this is. I'm still going to give him the proper formal introduction, and I'll give you guys a couple more seconds to get on here. But I'm going to give him the proper esteem, the proper respect, and do it the Dan Rather way. I'll do that here in a second. But before I introduce you, I'll say welcome to the show, my friend.
Hey, thank you so much, man, for having me, Mr. Norris Williams.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I titled the show, It's Bigger Than Money, because one thing I've learned, and I'm sure Bobby's going to share some ideas here with you in a minute, that once you get to a certain level, making more money is not, it doesn't become the goal anymore. And then you look back and see, well, what happened along the way that really pushed me to that was beyond just the money. So I want to dig deep into the trenches and talk about some of those things and talk about some of the experiences. I've already shared some of mine, but I'm going to be nosy and dig into some of his for the benefit of myself and for the audience here. So I'm gonna go ahead and jump right into it. We got a couple of people here. He's the CEO of DOS Group Incorporated, the holding company for AskDOS, DOS Pros, DOS Social Agents, DOS Home Loans, DOS Home Warranty, and everything DOS. I added that part in there. DOS is a prop tech company that's obsessed with creating an end-to-end fair price digital real estate marketplace. They are developing a voice-activated intelligent assistant built into the proprietary search and transactional platform that empowers the consumer and realtors to ask any question about any property in the world to get accurate, easy, and instant answers 24/7. And I'm going to sum all that up because I've had a few meetings with Bobby, and that basically means it's like having a realtor in your pocket.
There you go.
Basically, is that right?
That's right. You're spot on.
I caught that. So before we jump into it, tell us a little bit. I'm just going to be wide open with it. Just tell us a little bit about Bobby Bryden, who he is and what he represents, other than Alabama.
Right. Well, that's it. Roll Tide. I'm done. just kidding. But Bobby Bryden, originally from Mobile, Alabama, moved to Houston in 2001. A little bit about me. Went to college at Troy State back in Alabama for undergrad and graduate school. I got my bachelor's degree in vocational rehabilitation, which is a form of counseling. I got my first master's in special education. I was fortunate enough to stay in school and accomplish a second master's before I turned 30 years old at the Prairie View A&M University in Education Administration. Taught school for a total of 5 years. I was fortunate enough to teach at Lamar High School here in Houston, in the River Oaks area. And you know, teaching is the foundation of, again, think about that, counseling, education. And so I take that approach in everything I do. Believe it or not, I played football all of my entire life from 4 years old up until I was a junior in college. I actually had a football scholarship. In other words, Norris, I was good enough to at least get a football scholarship. But I was also a bit of a nerd, guy with a personality, for those who know me. Although I do social media wise probably have this very stoic demeanor, I am a guy who has a range to them in regards to, I am serious as hell about my business. At the same time, I love people and engaging and studying and getting to know and helping people. And that's probably the root of who and what I am. I do have two beautiful kids. They're older. I have a 26-year-old and a 23-year-old. I started when I was 10, so don't judge me. That's what we, that's what we do in Alabama. We have babies early, so while 45-year-olds are just having kids, I'm living my best life over here. You know, beautiful mom lives in Dallas. I have just me and a sister. We have a small family. My sister is a nurse, one of the smartest women I know, who live in Dallas. And but no, I've been in Houston. I got into the real estate industry 20 years ago, and I've touched every aspect of it, which is allowing us to create this digital real estate marketplace that we're doing today with Dawson.
Awesome, awesome. Now, the way I'm a little unorthodox in my approach, so I'm going to go back to the whole, well, first of all, I want to say, I didn't know you went to Troy. I went to Stephen F. Austin. We played y'all a couple of times back in the early 90s. I wasn't on the football team, but I was on the party team. I was at that game.
There you go.
But I didn't even know you went to Troy. Okay, good deal. Mm-hmm. So I want to talk about, but we went all the way to the end. Now I want to go back to more of a 30,000 foot view.
Okay.
And, you know, most of what we want to talk about here today is mindset and how, to me, mindset is the most important thing. And I always talk about how one of the theories I teach is, you know, wealth is mindset plus mechanics. And everybody wants to learn the mechanics, the how to get everything done, how to invest in real estate, how to sell a house, how to invest in stocks, bonds, mutual funds. But not a lot of people really want to talk about the mindset behind succeeding at that stuff. And I think that's what drives the whole car. So I want to ask, how important is mindset to success from your perspective?
You know, it is the foundation. Actually, in order to build any house, I'm in real estate, so that's going to be my analogy. In order to build any house, you have to have a very thick and sturdy foundation. And mindset is that foundation. I got to start with a famous quote by a beautiful woman by the name of Audre Lorde. And she said, if I didn't define myself for myself, I would be crunched into people's fantasies for me and eaten alive.
Wow.
That's a mindset statement.
Absolutely.
If I didn't define myself for myself, and we do it, mindset is extremely important in regards to everything here, and because if this doesn't embody what it is that you're seeking to accomplish, or you having the ability, capacity, and desire, all of that is part of mindset. And if you don't have the ability, capacity, and desire, you're in a tough spot. You're in a very tough spot for whatever it is you're seeking to accomplish.
I totally agree with that. And the funny thing is, our backgrounds are pretty much the same. We're basically country boys who moved to the city. And that's basically how both of our stories.
Yes.
So yeah. I'm wondering, why isn't that we weren't, well, I'll speak for myself. I know I wasn't given like the advanced mindset stuff that I know now. Why do you think, was it an education thing that failed us? Was it just how everything was then? Why do you not think we didn't have access to the advanced mindset stuff that we have now? Because I believe if I'd had the stuff I know now, if I'd had that, because a lot of the books we read were in print back then. But what do you think would have been the difference had we been exposed to this type of mindset stuff like at 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 teenage years?
Man, I can only imagine. I was fortunate in a lot of ways to have some phenomenal men around me growing up. You know, of course, starting with my father, but, you know, I had a village of phenomenal men that poured into me, but they only could also still teach me to the edge of their capacity and what their experience was. I remember being a boy back in Alabama, and every time we went grocery shopping, I would grab the Black Enterprise magazine because I saw people who worked for themselves, but I didn't see executives in suits and, you know, cats on that level.
Right.
So I had to actually embellish in a lot of reading, you know, but to see the way, you know, and what you do and the way information now is so readily available. I mean, you had to consciously look forward back when you and I were kids.
Right.
Whereas now, all you have to do is plug in. Right. All you have to do is now it's on every channel now. You know, so I could only imagine if I had that type of access. And not only that, but platforms where I could see more faces that looked like mine.
Absolutely.
You know, back then that I could relate to. And that just wasn't the case growing up.
Absolutely. So let me ask you this. With that being said, what would you say, all the business to the side, everything, what drives Bobby? What, and when you wake up in the morning, what makes you get up and go get it?
You know, and then I got to go back to an Alabama statement by Nick Saban. But it's true. If to know me is to know that I am a fucking sore loser. Mm. I hate losing. And when I heard Nick Saban give this quote, and he said, I hate to lose more than I love to win.
Wow.
I hate to lose more than I love to win. And so in a classic Will statement, a Will Smith statement is that we're going to get on this treadmill and I'm going to die, but you will not outwork me.
Wow.
And you will not outsmart me on this. If it's something that I want to do, and trust me, I am unequivocally doing something that I love doing and I believe it to the core and I'm willing to die for it. But with that being said, what motivates me is being the absolute best at what it is I decide for me that I want to have for me, not for anybody else. And so that I'm intrinsically motivated. I don't have to go out there looking for it to be motivated or inspired. I wake up every morning with my big picture, hungry. Mm. And believing that if it's to happen, it starts with me.
Absolutely. So let's go back to your childhood again. Now, you just characterized what a lot of people call the eye of the tiger. Mm-hmm. Where do you think that comes from? When did that start? Was there an event that happened in your life? Because, you know, some people will experience things and it triggers them and changes them forever. Was there an event? Was there a moment to where that was activated? Or would you just come out of the womb and say, boom, I'm here. Let's go get it.
I think that, I mean, it was intrinsic for me. It was intrinsic. I think I was born that way, to be honest with you. I played sports. I had to. I poured my energy into sports, into academics. I wanted to be in the top tier of everything I did. And I practiced relentlessly at whatever it was for that. I didn't need pats on the back. I did it because I wanted it for me. I've always been that guy. I think if we could interview 10, 15 people who really knew me back growing up would say, this dude's been this way ever since day one. And so, but my father, who's a military man, the structure came from there.
Gotcha.
My mother, who was a very soft yet strong woman, had a work drive that could run circles around people. So I'm a product of that. And so I intrinsically was born that way, but I had the perfect mother and father that rallied around that and made sure that they put me into activities that could harness that. I even recommend parents to do that with their kids. Don't exhaust their gift. If anything, take notice of it and rally around that gift. And water it and put the sunshine on it. And if anything, grow it. Don't make them into you like a progressive commercial. Don't be your parents, right? You know? And so, but my parents saw what they saw in me and was willing to nurture and cultivate it.
Now, on a very granular level, just to get down, as my dad would say, get down to the nut cutting. Now, you just explained that, but is there something that you do on a daily basis to build that muscle? Because we're always improving every day. To me, every day is about growth. Do a little something every now and then. Just like Albert Einstein says, the greatest thing in the world is compound interest, because you do a little bit every period to eventually, get major returns at the end. So is there something you do daily, some kind of practice, maybe meditation, writing your goals down? Because I like to give people the nuts and the bolts. So is there something Bobby does every day that helps him build toward the ultimate destination he wants to get to?
If it's a couple of things I'm going to do every day, and it's interesting. This is my little routine, but I'm going to grab my phone. I'm going to go straight to the bathroom and I'm going to turn on jazz. I'm going to turn on classic jazz. I gotta enter into this mental space of peace.
Okay.
And I gotta start that way first thing in the morning, because you better believe throughout that day some shit's gonna happen that's gonna attack that peace. And there's gonna be ebb and flows to the day. I just want more peak moments than valley. But the thing is I'm gonna listen to my jazz. I'm gonna drink my tea. Before I get to the car, I am looking for a Les Brown motivational video. I almost need to piss myself off a little bit.
Oh wow.
I almost need to boil a little bit. And then once I get into the car and I'm done, I don't know what it is, but the universe makes sure I have some type of hype music. I turn it on. And I'm in the car before I drive, and I'm just in my hype moment.
You that guy.
I'm that guy. And I'm a 47, almost 48, 3 weeks away, high energy guy. And it's just who I am and what I feel like I need to be because of the company and the size that it is now and the size it's becoming. At times you have to have energy for everybody else.
Mm.
And so I have to be high energy, and that's my flow. It's nothing more, oh my gosh, or wow to it than really that. I have to go through a serenity in the beginning real slow, and then it's like I just work up to it, and I just work up to it, and that's what works for me.
Sounds like a plan.
Yes.
So I want to go back to, because you haven't always been an entrepreneur. So you said when you first moved to Houston, mm-hmm. Well, first of all, when you first moved to Houston, what was your... Like me, when I first moved here, country boy coming to Houston, I was like, man, what did I do?
Oh my gosh, yes.
So what made you go into teaching, first of all? Mm-hmm. And well, we're going to talk about that part on the A, and then on the B part, I want to talk about the transition from teaching into entrepreneurship. So let's talk about teaching and what you got out of teaching that may have helped you later on as an entrepreneur.
Yeah, so what got me into teaching is my mom worked in the educational system. And so it just kind of was natural. And I think what also intrigues people even more is that I chose to get a master's degree, and I taught special education. Think about that. But there's an art to that. And I say it jokingly, but I'm like, yeah, if you don't understand what I'm saying, then some is you. I taught special education. You know, so I tend to try to speak very clear and intentional to mobilize a message, because my father said something very important to me a long time ago. Nobody owes it to you to understand you. The task is yours to be understood.
Wow.
And so when you think of that, and you think of talking to people, and you think of mobilizing an idea or a thought, when all of us, and what teaching did to me was it really prepared me for talking to people, in front of people, an audience of people, trying to mobilize an idea, a thought. And if I could sell this idea, this thought of education to special needs kids, then I'm able to do that and meet any individual where they're at, right? A lot of us are in our industries and we're talking like rocket scientists, meaning that the only people that can understand you are other rocket scientists. You have to talk like a truck driver, because everybody can understand that truck driver, right? And other truck drivers and rocket scientists can understand a truck driver.
Absolutely. Right?
And so what we have to do, and what education did for me, was help me better articulate my intent, my purpose, because communication is everything. And right. By crossing over to being in business, you know, to be able to use that, to be able to, if I choose to hire somebody, if I choose to bring somebody on my team, if I felt and believed that you had the ability to be on my team, then now the responsibility is for me to communicate your task clearly and to support you therefore. Mm-hmm. And if I'm able to do that successfully, and if I'm able to pull out of you which that you didn't know you had within you, then we're winning. We're winning together. And that's what I think education and business have has done for me in terms of working with my people.
Right. And I want to back up just a little bit to your teaching. You're having fun. Like, I've never met a teacher that didn't love their kids. They may not like the bureaucracy or whatever. Right. They always love their kids. So you spent those years with those kids. Take us to the moment where you're like, okay, this is great. I love it. But this entrepreneurial bug is hitting me. Take us to the moment where you made the decision, I'm going into business. And how'd you decide real estate? Or if it real estate was even the first thing?
Well, yeah, I've been in real estate a long time, and I did it part time. Okay. You know, you said something early, and then I moved to Houston, and I start realizing as I start talking to other people, I'm like, okay, cool. I think I'm a pretty smart dude, right? And then I get out here and I'm meeting people and I'm hearing them saying, oh man, I make $100,000 a year. Oh man, I'm making $150,000. And then when I'm engaging in dialogue with them, I'm like, man, this dude don't seem that smart. He making that kind of money. I'm over here with two master's degrees. And my mama told me, don't be smart for nothing. I mean, I really got to figure this thing out, you know? And so that's what made me decide to jump full time and be self-employed, is because I needed my income to match or exceed my wits. And I'm watching people that I didn't feel like that were cognitively as strong as I was, but yet they were making money. They didn't have the degrees that I had, but yet they were making more money.
Right.
And that's a whole nother, you know, a podcast right there. But I transitioned over because I just really got to a point of being sick and tired. I wanted a lifestyle. And all I had was these degrees on the wall, but they weren't, you know, equating into working at a job and paying me what I felt like, you know, I hate the word deserve, but the income that I felt like I needed to provide my family, the level of, you know, and the quality of life that I wanted to provide, especially right. when compared to how I grew up.
Man, so tell us about. If every entrepreneur has experienced this, that has stayed for the duration, that first big check. When I say, I'm not asking the amount.
Yeah.
But when I say big check, if you're coming from a regular job, you know what I mean by big check.
Yeah.
Tell us about how you made that first big check. How did it make you feel? Take us as if we were there. What happened? You closed the deal. How did it happen? How'd you feel? How'd you celebrate?
You know, it was a true pursuit of happiness moment. If you guys saw Will Smith in that movie and the whole struggle, the process. And then when he got that job, you know, the first thing he did was he rocked like this when that guy was talking and he told him, you know, bring that shirt tomorrow. And he's crying and his tears.
I remember that.
And he walked outside and it was just his moment. That's why I said earlier, I need no pats on the back. You know, my moment was intimate. It was a moment for me. It was a moment I knew I could do it. It was a moment of relief. And it was a moment of, damn, the journey is just starting. Mm. You know, because a lot of times what we have to understand is what we're begging for and asking for. Not only do we need to have the shoulders to endure that, but we have to even build our shoulders to sustain it, because you're just getting started. And so when I got that first check, it was a relief moment. I was relieved because it's one thing to go punch into somebody's clock and you pretty much have this ceiling. But I also realized it was the beginning of a new chapter, and it was about to become a new taste of potential infinity that was about to embark upon. And what was crazy when I got to the point to where, when I took a salary with two master's degrees and I started making that in a month, that's when it got really, it was like, wow.
Right.
Wow. And then you have to humble yourself within that, because it's easy to lose it. It's easy to lose focus and get caught into the material if you don't stay humbled in it.
Man, I think we've all, experienced that, because like when I first moved here, everything was flashy. I'm like, oh man, that's what success looks like. And
exactly.
Get there, and then you take your losses too. You're like, whoa, they didn't tell me about this part. They just told me about this over here.
Exactly.
But the first check thing reminds me of when I first moved here. My very, very first job was leasing apartments. I used to lease luxury apartments. Like, my first job was actually in Fourth Ward before it looked like it looked now.
Yes.
And this is when they first started, you know, gentrifying over there. And I worked at these apartments, and this young man came in, and on his application, now this is straight out the country state. I got my degrees and everything. So I'm thinking, you know, 30, 40, 50,000 a year is good money. From where I'm from, that's good money.
Yes.
So, you know, neither one of my parents ever made more than like $30,000 a year ever. So mm-hmm. to me, that was good. So he filled out his application and he wrote $20,000 on the application. So I'm thinking he meant $20,000 a year. So I called him. I'm like, man, you know, you're not going to qualify with $20,000 a year. This apartment is, it was like $1,500 or whatever. He's like, no, sir, that's $20,000 a month. I said, $20,000 a month?
Yeah, yeah.
I did something wrong because he was a lot younger than me and all this kind of stuff. So I'm like, I got to find out what he does. So when he came, he was in medical sales. And this guy was maybe 21, 22. I'm sitting there thinking, $20,000 a month to me at that point was like unfathomable. I'm like, $20,000? You know what I can do with $20,000 a month? Yeah. It was crazy. So that's the first thing that like cracked me open. It made me be like, what the sad story? I've told you this story before, but the first time I met this gentleman, probably 2003, 2004, somewhere in there. And the church I belonged to at the time was having an entrepreneurship symposium.
Yes.
Bobby was one of the invited speakers. I didn't know him at the time, had never seen him or heard of him or whatever. And this gentleman drives up in a brand new red Plymouth Prowler. Who is this dude? Well, he hadn't went in yet. So he drove in front of everybody. And I'm like, who is this guy? Now, first of all, I'm too big to fit in one, but I still liked how it looked. I'm like, that's success right there. And I'm like, who is this dude? And then when I found out that like we were about the same age, I'm like, now what is he doing that I'm not doing? And it was good to see a brother that was doing big things, because that was, like I said, 2003. So I wasn't fully the whole entrepreneurship thing. I was still like one leg in, one leg out, trying to figure it out. Yes. But you were one of the first examples of somebody that went out there and, you know, grabbed the bull by the horns. And I'm like, this is amazing. And the talk you gave too was like over the top. And I'm like, okay, it's something different here. So you had an effect on me is why I'm saying all that.
No, I appreciate that. And it's interesting what you just said. I got to tell people to research more than you ask. Don't. And if you're going to ask somebody who has the credentials, ask somebody who's actually done it and doing it. It's a bunch of 30,000 heirs walking around here just like in Atlanta, right? You know, and so you gotta make sure that you research. Yes, it takes time. Yes, you got to read. Yes, you got to turn around and read more than one book a year. I mean, but you got to research more than you ask people questions. And is there 10 ways, 50 ways to get to a destination? Yes. But you have to figure out which route is best for you. Do you love and like what you're doing? Notice that order I said, do you love and like what you're doing? And I've been in real estate for a while because I love it. Have I peaked out? Yes. Have I valleyed out? Yes. Right. But you got to keep up the good fight, man. And what you said is very important. Because when you see it, I think about the first man that ran a 4-minute mile.
Roger Bannister.
Nobody was able to do it until he did it.
Right.
And it was almost like they just needed to see the first man to do it. And after he did it, everybody else start doing it.
Right.
Why are we like that? You see what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
And so I say to everybody that's watching this, first, be very, very, very careful who you allow to pour into you. Mm. Be very meticulous about that. Right. And in addition to that, master your moment. You master your moment, slow everything down, get all the distractions away, peel back the layers, master your moment, no matter how long that takes, because Norris and I both, and I'm sure this is probably one of his questions, will tell you, it took us 5 to 10 years to master ourselves in order to maximize our moment.
Right. I was actually going to get to that because when I made that post on Facebook one day, and you hit me up immediately, like, I went through the same thing, because for a good solid 10 years, mm-hmm. I was really trying. I hate to use the cliche "find myself," but I can't define it any better than that. I was really, now I was functioning. I was doing everything I was supposed to do, but on the inside, I'm like, I'm still empty. I'm still looking. I'm still searching for something. I'm still looking for something to pour into me. I'm like, and the great thing is, you know, they say it's okay to go through hell as long as you keep going.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was dealing with a whole lot of, you know, personal issues and things of that nature, but something just kept telling me, keep going. And now, for those who are listening, we're not by any way saying we got all this shit figured out. We are not saying that at all. We just keep going. Like a good friend of mine who worked for me when I first launched my business back in 07, he kept telling me, you're going to succeed for one reason, because you're too stupid to quit.
Yeah.
And, when he said that to me, I was offended temporarily, but after a while, I'm like, that's a damn good compliment.
Exactly.
You like that. So speaking of those 10 years, I want you to take me to, earlier you talked about the peaks and the valleys. Let's go to the valley for a minute.
Mm-hmm.
And what would you say, because I know that you had the mortgage business in the early 2000s. I know the crash happened in 2007, 2008. Take us to when you saw, if this is an example you want to use, about when the mortgage business said, and did that. Take us through when you first saw this might be a problem to when it was like, okay, this is gone. This opportunity is gone.
Yeah, that's a very interesting moment. I had almost $1 million house in the Galleria. I think I was the first guy, black guy, to buy a house in that neighborhood.
Wow.
I'm right across the street from St. Michael's Church on Sage.
I know exactly what it is.
I wake up every morning, I'm jogging through Tanglewood. My office inside the Galleria Mall Financial Center. I had the toys, I had the cars. Everything was beautiful. Money was great, and I mean great. And then next thing you know, you're right, the shit hit the fan. And I had a lot of money saved up. I had north of $500,000 saved up. And then next thing you know, 1 month went by, revenue was almost at zero. The industry was being impacted month over month. It was getting worse and worse and worse. Then third month, and you got to keep in mind, my monthly expenses are no joke. I got a big house over here. I got the cars. I got the office, the toys. And month over month, I'm watching my savings deplete.
Right.
To the point to where I said, okay, and I'm calling everybody. Everybody's calling me. What are you seeing? What's going on? What's happening? Hey, just hang in there, hang in there. Hang in there got me down to probably my last $100,000. To the point to where I was just like, I got to do something. I start selling all of my assets, which is the reason why you buy stuff. You know, sometimes people don't understand what I've realized. When you hit it, you know, you get to a level, people buy stuff so they can have it to sell later on. You know, and so I was able to, I had stuff I could sell. And what I did was, is I put my house up for rent. As a matter of fact, I put it up for sale. But everybody in that price point was broke too. They were going through this recession and it was hitting them upside the head as well.
Sure.
So I didn't have anybody in that, you know, we're talking about that price point in Houston. We're probably only talking about 5% of all the buyers can even afford this house.
Right.
And everybody in that category is holding on for dear life. And so it eventually went from selling it to renting it out. And then I rented it out. I moved over and I went to an apartment. I'm a single father this time. I'm raising both of my kids. I needed to keep them at the school they were at so their friends wouldn't change, because it's one thing for your lifestyle and finances to change, but I'm trying to keep my kids
right in
an environment that they're comfortable with. I had to call my mom to come move down and help out, because I'm a single parent with two kids in real estate. And when do people want to see houses in the evening? And I'm working 10 times over now,
right,
trying to keep in. It was a tough time. And I had to close my office. That's why I'm eating this pandemic like chocolate cake, because I'm like, this was nothing comparison to 08 to 2013.
Right.
And it was a tough moment. What I decided to do was shut everything down. I literally shut all my businesses down. And I had my laptop in an apartment, and I put myself in my own personal laboratory for an entire year.
Hmm.
and I just studied. I didn't work or try to even earn money for a year. And I just woke up in the morning, took my kids to school. I picked them up in the evenings, and I just sat in my apartment all day reading, trying to figure out what the hell happened. And so when I, all of a sudden, the movie came out, The Big Short, and it was like everything I studied, because I was really, I didn't want to leave real estate, but I needed to understand what the hell just happened and how are we going to come out of this?
Right.
And so I say, all that to say is that another thing my military dad would always teach me is to not react, to respond. A reaction is without thought. Hmm. I sat down and I called myself, and thank God I was in a position to have some savings left over in order to go through that process and move as less as possible. So I didn't have to spend money other than groceries and gas. Hmm. I end up selling my Prowler. I had to take it to CarMax. Mm. And the amount that they gave me was a fucking insult.
Of course. That's the way they make money.
Yeah. And so, but that's all what happened. And this is as transparent as I've ever been about that moment, because I'm real private. I really don't care, and don't nobody really give a shit. How are you going to rebound from it? And that's just my attitude about it. I don't woe is me stories. I am okay, do something about that shit, you know, if you want to get out of it, type of person. But it was a moment. It was a moment. I wrote a chapter in it. It went bestseller. I co-authored, and it was called Evolve or Die. Mm. And I talked about that moment, how I had to evolve, and thank God going through that moment has led me to where I'm at today.
Awesome. Awesome. I'm glad to hear that. And like you use the word transparency. That's one of the things that I always want to do, because a lot of us who have become successful and done great things, sometimes I think we make it look too easy, because see, I'm private like you too. I don't always share everything. I just, okay, what's the solution? Go do it. Because nobody wants to hear your side story anyway, to be honest with you. Nobody really knows. I just think it's important that if we share deep things, if somebody's going through it right now, they can see that, okay, there is a solution. There is a way out. So. Yeah. The only other question I have on that is, when you were at the very lowest, whatever you would define as the lowest, and I'm doing this for the benefit of the audience, if when you, because I'm sure there are some people who are feeling this right now, and then in the middle of the pandemic, everything is going on. When you were in at the very bottom, and all you can do was look up, how did you feel about yourself in that moment, one? And two, how did you turn the corner and come out of that? What did you do on the inside? Not all of it, not the outside actions. What did you do on the inside for the come up?
Yeah, so a good question. The thing is that I never ever put on the victim hat.
You did.
Right? I never put on a victim hat. Never in my life. I'm going to always, regardless, I will take responsibility. I'm not perfect, and neither are situations. Life is very fluid. And did I like going through that? Hell no. I wouldn't wish it on my enemy. But it was humbling. It was humbling as hell. But one thing that I knew that I possessed was again, I got to use these three words again, was the ability and the capacity and desire. You know, I possess those things. Here's the thing that we have to ask ourselves when we're in that rut, is whether you put yourself there or not, do you have the capacity to think yourself out of it?
Right.
It's one thing to be in a hole. It is a way to get out, but can you figure that shit out? Hmm. Can you think yourself out of what you put yourself in? Or maybe somebody else put you in. It doesn't matter. Shit, you in a hole. Can you think out of it? And that goes back to that innate, you know, growing up like that, coming out of my mom's womb that way. Right. When, you know, man, let's just be honest. As simple as winners win and losers lose. And so the thing is it's okay to go through the shit. It's okay to go through the peaks and valleys. But man, at the end of the day, winners win and losers lose. And if you keep losing,
you need to ask yourself a fucking question.
Damn, I might be. And so it's have more wins than losses. When you see a football team and they have a winning season, it's because they won more games than they lost. It's just that easy.
Right.
And so nobody's saying you got to go 10-0. Just be 6-5. And you can't be Alabama with that record, but you get my point. And I hope I answered that question. It's that it's not fun. It's not sexy. Get off social media with everybody selling their lies and making it look like they marriage happy when it's not, when they acting like, you know, they live in a $1 million lifestyle and they not.
Right.
You know, get off of it and focus on aligning your ability, capacity, and do you have a burning desire? Are you working as hard as you wishing and praying? Mm. And if you're working hard and smart and more than you wishing, hoping, and praying, then you'll get there. Mm. And that really was my method of I am going to tangibly do something. Who do I need to meet? What do I need to know? And exactly what do I need to do and where do I need to be?
Amen.
I'm as premeditated as possible. I spend no time with nobody I don't want to, and nobody has the power to waste my time.
That's amazing. Y'all take notes on what he just said right there. Take notes on that, because that was awesome. And now we're not saying you can't make mistakes. We're not saying you can't take a loss. But just like he just said, as long as you're making more wins than losses, you're fine. It's not going to be perfect. There's no perfect trajectory. It's going to be ups, down. Yeah. But like the stock market, as long as you're trending up, then you'll get there. Exactly. Now, I want to talk about DOS. Now, I know you and I will get on here and get excited and be long with you. So for those of you, we're gonna bring it around. DOS. Now, I know you've ran a lot of businesses. I know that you did iBuy Realty before, which was, I would say, the first iteration of DOS.
Perfect.
Am I correct in saying that?
Yeah, perfect statement. Yes.
Okay. So, why is now the time for DOS? What about technology takes real estate in that direction? And I beckon back to, you know, I've listened to you speak. I read some of your articles. Real estate is still like the dinosaur as far as compared to other industries. Like the model right now is like 100 plus years old. Why is the time for DOS right now?
I write for Forbes. So I'm a contributor with Forbes, for those who don't know. And I just released a piece that kind of talks about exactly this question. And we have a real estate industry that was founded and made formal in 1908. So that's about 112, 113 years ago. Right. And the reality is we still primarily follow that same business model. And to think that, you know, technology has evolved every industry, primarily except for the real estate industry, in terms that it's benefited the realtor, the practitioner, but those benefits hadn't spewed over to the consumer side. Hmm. And what DOS is wanting to do is, unlike a lot of the companies before us that are industry-centric, we want to create a consumer-centric solution. A consumer-centric real estate model that exactly what our mission statement is to develop the best technology to make homeownership more affordable. And so we take that mission very serious into making it more economical for a seller to sell a home and making it more economical for a buyer to buy a home by giving them a rebate to lower their closing costs. And so when you talk about an industry that was created before right now, who's the largest, smartest, most diverse generation in history, which is the millennial generation, they function different. They want different things. Their characteristics and habits are different than my generation, which is Gen X, and the baby boomers before me. But yet the baby boomers and even the baby boomers are the one who created this industry.
Right.
So imagine the millennial, who's the number one purchaser of homes right now, functioning within an industry that was created before their existence. And we want to evolve real estate as we see it for that largest, most diverse, most educated generation and meet them where they are at instead of forcing them to adapt and evolve to an industry that's 113 years old.
Wow. So, man, that's a lot. And it sounds very exciting. And yes. I want to give you the opportunity because I think this is important. This will be my last question as we wrap it up. Mm-hmm. I want you to speak directly to all real estate professionals, realtors, mortgage loan officers, appraisers. Why DOS specifically could be a great partnership for them? Because I don't think a lot of people really know how they're, and we can talk about it from the top down or bottom up or however you want to discuss it. Why is an opportunity for a partnership with DOS a way that they can really take their careers to the next level? And you can address that however you want to, and you can even make it as personal as you want to, since you know you're the co-founder and basically the leader. Tell them why, because I have a lot of friends that are realtors on here. So go ahead.
So I have to say, disclaimer out the gate is that no company is, you know, perfect for everybody. If that was the case, everybody would be working at that company.
Right.
You're going to have a Lyft. And you're going to have an Uber, right? And so, but it's interesting because DOS is built and based on statistical data. I just so happen to be fortunate to be the only African American in the country that was interviewed in 2015 by Stefan Swanepoel, who was commissioned by the National Association of Realtors to determine what he believed was the black swans of the real estate industry, meaning what are the unforeseen forces that could really bring the real estate industry down? It was the most comprehensive study ever done. He interviewed people from the Gary Kellers to the CEOs of Remax to the CEO of Zillow. And yours truly was the only African-American and one of three, being Bob Hale, myself, and Rita Santa Maria, that was interviewed in Houston. So I'm excited that on a national level that people see and respect my work in my opinion. But the data, 32% of all realtors in the country don't even close a single deal all year long. 32%. Now, let's make that even more clear. That's 32% of approximately 1.4 million realtors. Another third, meaning approximately total of 65%, but another third only close between 1 and 3 all year long. And so when you have a consumer that's evolving, but you have an industry that is clamming and scratching and fighting to stay the same, how does that happen? How does that work? It doesn't. You can't have an 8-track mentality in a Pandora world.
Wow.
I pause because I want that to sink in. You can't have an 8-track mentality in a Pandora world. That's like going to jail for 30 years and you come out and now you're dealing with a different world.
Right.
But you have an industry that's clamoring to stay the same. Their value proposition is under attack every day. I'm on every realtor Facebook group. I see it all. I speak throughout the country. Everybody's saying, well, how do you respond when somebody asks you for some of your commission? Hey, what's your new value proposition? We can't keep saying the same stuff over and over again and rehashing a value proposition that doesn't take in consideration the consumer. The real estate industry is sincerely conflicted with how do I make the consumer first and make me first and make it about me at the same time. And so at DOS, we really wanted to do the due diligence and research, and we spent a lot of years and honestly over $1 million of research and development, like literally over $1 million researching and trying to figure out and study and understand like what will and can the future of real estate look like the way we see it based on the data and the information. And we came up with DOS, and what we believe is, and what our research showed us was, after surveying thousands of people, is that I'm a consumer. I want the best service at a fair price. Mm-hmm. That was the result. We even started saying that. Hey, great service at a fair price. But what does fair mean? And realize that fair is a word that's probably used more by millennials than any other generation. But that's the word that was used. And so when we were trying to determine what do people want, we realized that when it comes to selling a home, that we needed to give them options. Why would I take a seller and treat them as a one size fits all? Mm. I got John Doe over here who sold 3-5 houses. I got Jane Doe who never sold her house before. She's a first time homeowner and now she wants to sell. I got the guy over here named Billy Doe and he hates realtors for whatever reason. Why would I treat these three different combinations of people the same? The industry as it stands right now does that. And so what DOS in essence wanted to create was, how can we create these pre-built options? It's almost like no haggling for real estate.
Wow.
And we're going to turn around and give you a menu of services, depending on who you are, seller, depending on who you are and what level of service you need and want based on your experience. Here you go. Choose from that. It's a preset menu. If you want to go non-MLS and sell it yourself, here you go. If you want flat fee MLS, here you go. This is how that works. If you want full service, 1% listing fee, here you go. Full service at a fair price. If you're a buyer, then we're going to give you a 1% rebate. It's amazing to me when I talk to the industry and I hear the masses start barking and saying what they aren't going to do or give or be, and they're not making any money. Hmm. But the realtors who are making the most money in this business, the top 10 percenters, all of them do reduced price listings and buy rebates. It's the broke ones who say they won't because they won't because they're broke. And so we believe, and which is happening, that we could actually save people money and make more money.
Wow.
Now, that's an oxymoron for the industry to hear. That just goes against their way of thinking. How the hell can you save people money and make more money? Easy. It's a comprehensive response. All of a sudden now, because of my value prop, I get clients easier by way of referral.
Sure.
Because I become known as the guy who provides great service at a fair price. Hmm. My referrals are higher. Yes, I do reduce the cost, but I close more deals. Right? And so that's how we look at the business. See, it's people out here who think that the Joe Rothschilds of the world and the Ronnie Cathy Matthews, when they go see the HBJ at the end of the year, they don't realize that all the builder listings they do for free. They don't even realize that. Why do they do that, though? See, the reality of it is you got to stop being so damn arrogant and thinking that buyers out here and people are looking for you. They're not looking for you. They're looking for houses. Right. That's why these guys do free listings. I'm not saying that's what we do, but for the builders, they do free listings. Why? Because buyers are on the MLS looking for those houses.
Right.
But then, yeah, they over here on the HBJ and they taking the top 25 honors when really on 200 of those sales, they didn't make any money. But let's talk about the 600 sales, though. They picked up buyers. So they had to give to get. It's a go-giver mentality.
Yes, sir.
DOS has adopted that mentality, and the mentality says is that your value proposition is closely attached to giving more in value than you expect in payment. And see, agents don't realize that they're two separate things. Value is what you get. Price is what you pay. See, the industry wants to intertwine that.
Wow.
No. I'm worth, my worth, my value, know your worth. You know what, man? Hey, I'm going to tell you what, Family Dollar knows theirs too, but the last time I checked, Macy's is shutting the hell down.
Quickly.
Yeah. And so you got to turn around and not try to associate your self-worth and value. It all adds up at the end of the year. When I walk into the store and I buy something that costs 5 cents or 10 cents or a dollar, and then you buy in that same store something that costs $20, at the end of the day, that cashier is going to total out that balance. And this is going to say, tan, 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 tan. And it doesn't matter. It's adding everything up for the day. But see, the industry kind of got this kill eat mentality that you know what? I got to charge this one person and I got to milk it. I ain't giving nothing. I got to get everything out of this person because I don't know when the next deal going to come. And if you got to function in the old mentality, yeah, I understand. But the way DOS functions is that we have a go-giver mentality and we actually make more money by saving people money. And that's our mentality and it's working for us and I love it.
Wow. There you have it, ladies and gentlemen. I can't answer that. That was, I've never heard it presented that way, but that makes 100% sense. Especially, look, they always say to be a great teacher, you got to be an even greater student. I got all kind of notes here. I mean, that's just, you know, along the way, I learned how you can learn anything from anybody. You know, they always say the fourth grader is God to the third grader. Yeah. So I'm looking to learn from everybody. Hey, everybody, I know we kept you a little bit over, but I got excited. We're giving tremendous value here. Hopefully he'll come back again one day. It's been a plum pleasing pleasure, as Mr. Les Brown would say. This is the I don't even know, bro. This was amazing for me because number one, I got to learn more about your path and where you went, and when you can identify with that, knowing that you've been through some of the similar stuff, yeah. Knowing that when you like you down here, you looking up and you're like, man, what did I get myself into? I could just go get a job and be done with this. Exactly. But hold on, not knocking jobs. I'm not knocking jobs. But for those of us who have that thing in here, like I want to maximize my value and a job is not going to do that for me. And like I said, we're not knocking jobs, but just for those of us crazy enough to go try it.
Exactly.
It did a lot for my soul today. I appreciate you, my brother, for coming on. We're definitely going to do it again.
Exactly.
Once again, we want you guys to understand it's bigger than money. This thing, money is a good measuring stick. But at the end of the day, you know, when I pass on and pass my legacy on, nobody's going to really care about how much money he made or what he did. It's what did he do for people? How did he add, as Bobby would say, add value? So we want to encourage you to do the same thing. And once again, this has been Bobby Bryan with AskDOS, ASKDOSS.com. Go check him out for realtors. And if you're looking to buy a home or you're looking to sell a home or if you're looking for a new home, you know, versus the brokerage where you are, a conversation is a conversation. That's all it really takes to see if it's a good fit or not. So, once again, ladies and gentlemen, enjoy your day. This has been Norris Williams, NorrisNetwork.com, and we will see you on the other side. Thank you, my friend, for joining me.
Thank you.